Hello and welcome to episode 101 of Gutter to Gutter Podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by return guest Logan Waterhouse. Logan joined us way back in episode 15 and we spoke then about him being a Datsun 120Y tragic, and almost 3 years on, nothing has changed. We got to talk about a massive crash that Logan had in his rally car that was once his double duty rally and drift car, the damage to driver, co-driver and the car, and how he's managed to repair it and bring it back to life. We also got to talk about another 120Y that will be built solely with drift in mind. Aside from that, I got to learn the differences between a pre-run and blind rally, as well as getting into more specific rally talk. I've been wanting to learn more about rally since the inception of the podcast, and this episode has been a great start into the world of rally for me. It was great to chat with Logan about so many different aspects of rally car setup and driving, and I hope that you will enjoy episode 101 with Logan Waterhouse on Gutter to Gutter Podcast. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Gutter to Gutter Podcast. I'm Static, and joined with me in this episode is Logan Waterhouse. Logan, how are you, mate?
How about yourself on this lovely rainy day?
It is a lovely rainy day, isn't it? what shit weather, man. Man, anyone that hadn't listened or hasn't listened right from the beginning, you were with us in episode 15. I actually thought we were in single digits still when you were with us last. So that's probably almost 3 years ago now.
Is that long ago?
Yeah. Well, at least 2.5 years.
Doesn't feel that long ago.
No, no way. So what's been going on, man? What's been going on?
I think at the time we'd mentioned I'd just picked up a second 120Y, which was a rally car, and I was going to do more rally stuff. In the meantime, I turned the drift car into a rally car, crashed it, cut it in half, fixed it, and that's going to stay a rally car now, and I've picked up another shell that would just be a drift car. Instead of going backwards and forwards.
Right, so is that the second shell that you had, is that the one that's currently sitting in my driveway?
No, that's the first, that's the drift car, now rally car.
That you crashed and
cut the front off and the floor out of it.
So for those listening along, we're probably, not even 5 minutes away from each other?
2.3 kilometres it is.
It's mapped it out. It's so you've driven the rally / drift / rally.
Just rally car.
Just rally car now.
Well, it was alternating between the two, and now it's just the one.
So that's currently sitting in my driveway on a nice wet day on some very slippery looking tyres.
They're road legal ones.
Nice.
But they're a Nankang AR1, so they have about 3.5 grooves in them between four tyres.
Nice. Awesome. So I guess tell us about your crash, I guess.
It was a bunch of things. I wasn't in the right headspace to really be driving. And on the day that, little bit of a backtrack, the other little rally car that I had a mate driving it. We'd done a deal, so he's going to do a few rallies in it. And it's been a rally car for, like, I can remember running around in service parks when I was like 5 years old going, oh, look at that car. It's like Dad's old one. And this car's still together, and I just picked it up. It was probably in need of a bit of a birthday engine-wise, and the engine, 3Ks into the first stage, had decided that was enough, and it put a leg out of bed. So I've driven past my other car, leg out of bed on the side of the road, just going, oh, this is great. And then up the road a couple more kilometres, and I couldn't get third gear, and then I could kind of force it in there, and then it wouldn't come out properly. I was like, days going from bad to worse pretty quickly. So in hindsight, we come up to a spectator point and I stood on it coming down the road because I knew where I was. Have it sideways because you finally conned your girlfriend to come and watch you at a rally. Oh, it's so awesome. And Dad's there. We go past and about 3 minutes after that, they get a phone call saying that it's all over. Get the car trailer. Because they had a gearbox problem, which was going to stop us from finishing the rally anyway, but in hindsight, should have pulled in at the spectator point. That's enough, but hindsight's a wonderful thing. So
That's not your style, either, is it?
No, it's normally push on and we'll get it done, but this day, just head wasn't in the right spot, and with the distraction of gearbox issue, and then it was at a place called Orange, which is renowned for, there's clay, and clay in amongst pine trees, if you're offline on the pine needles and the clay, you are a passenger, and there's not much scarier than when you've got the car in the wrong spot and you go through all of the things to help you get back to where you want to go to, and none of them work.
Nothing's working at all.
And you even try not to object fixate, so you're like looking at the road where you want to go as wide as you could possibly be without it being a problem, because you know you're not going to hit the apex. And yeah, then at some point you've got to realise that this is going to hurt in a minute, or less than a minute. So we did 10.12 kilometres of territory pad on it, and the last 100 metres, I reckon, we were not in control. Just
wow.
Dead straight, car wouldn't turn, wouldn't stop, we're already going fast enough, and we hit square in the front, and I mean like the Datsun badge in the grill, middle of this pine tree, we're doing about 80 k's, and it stopped quicker than instantly, I reckon.
Ouch.
More, you spend more time falling back into the seat than what you did actually stopping.
Wow.
Which is a big hit.
So, with injuries involved?
Initially thought we were really lucky, because I had a bit of a moment to myself, screamed and carried on as I hopped out of the car. Mum was a bit, because Mum was a navigator, day before Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, Mum. She was thrilled about that.
Nice, perfect.
She was a little bit sort of scared that it all happened that quick. She was more frustrated that Dad had a crash a long time ago, and it was the same type of crash. And she was just upset that I'd had the same crash, not that she was in the crash. And
I
was
like, right.
How's that work? But she had whacked a thumb on the terra trip in the car when we'd stopped swinging forward, and my legs had flung forwards, and I got my left leg, it belted the bottom of the clutch pedal, and it swelled up bigger than my calf, the bottom of my leg did. So we were taken to Orange Hospital, and there was only a bit of muscle damage done to me, and Mum had fractured a finger. But in the meantime, I've never had something hurt that much ever, like throwing up in a bag because of my leg, and I was like, this thing better be broken. It hurts.
And it wasn't broken?
No, nah, not broken, nothing. I was like, really? It just looked like a big wimp.
And, I don't know, man, like 80 k's into a tree, dead stop.
Bloody tree didn't move either.
Yeah, no, they don't for
and
some reason.
For those listening at home, there is video on YouTube of the whole experience.
Oh, I'll have to find that and link it.
I've not watched that. And so. Even at the end of it, it's slow motion as it's leaving the road and jumping sort of the gutter into the tree, and even that's too fast to watch. You sort of stand, sort of like flinch when you watch it. It's just happens that quick.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so once we were sort of all right in hospital, they gave us some pretty good stuff to make the legs stop hurting. But I'm getting photos from my lovely girlfriend, Morgan, of standing in front of the car in the nice little dent in front of it. Peace sign. I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah, geez.
Love you too. And luckily, Dad, family, friends, and girlfriend and that, luckily we actually took girlfriend's car up there at the time. It had a winch, so we had my car trailer on Dad's ute and used girlfriend's car with a winch to just skull drag the thing onto the trailer, because it had pushed the engine back about half a metre, and the gearbox was stuck into the ground. It's a live axle car, so the rear diff had about 50 mil of toe in. It was tried pressing tail shaft and the gearbox and everything through it.
That's a good effort.
And I was very surprised there wasn't any electrical fires when it hit, because it just destroyed everything in the front of it. So.
Nice. So, I mean, sounds like you got off pretty
well. Got off very lucky. To be able, really, all we did was we crashed, and it was a big crash. Luckily, we had both had good helmets, hands device, and good harnesses, and we could just turn to each other, you all right? Yep, step out of the car. That was all we did.
Which is
pretty cool.
It's unreal. And you full cage in that too, aren't you?
Yeah, it's got an 8-point cage, so it goes the 6 points in the car, and then it has extra bars that go through to the front strut towers, which actually, the cage was that good, the door still open and shut on it, punching everything through the firewall, that's dragging unreal. A tunnel and stuff. Like, it pulled the tunnel in the car down probably 3 inches, and that the gear knob that's normally nearly a foot above the tunnel, leveled with the tunnel.
Wow. So is that just the gearbox, like, coming down that's done that, that's pulled that
the engine had come and ripped all the firewall open, come back, but then when it's done that, obviously the bell housing, as it starts to spread to the size of the engine, it then pushes it down and angles the engine.
Yep.
So, and my biggest thing, once we worked out we were right, is the engine, because I don't want to have to go buy another Navara or Farmer Joe to pull an engine out of, and the shell bit's an easy fix.
Speak to old mate round the corner here. He seems to find them every second week.
He's always got one. They're always twin cam ones too.
That's right. I don't know how he does it, man. We're talking about Shonky, by the way. Somehow he finds all these
every
things.
Good twin cam Navara.
So the engine that is in that, if I don't know how many people have listened along to episode 15, it was quite a while now, as we said. The engine in that is the KA24DE, which is a twin cam version of the motor that's in
your Navara. You just got a single slammer.
That's right.
I think that's what the Yanks call them over
something
there.
Like that, yeah. Mine's a single cab. You've got the twin cam, which is, I'm envious, but it's also twin carbine, right? You've gotten rid of all the injection, running twin Webers.
Yep. At the time, 45s, now it's got twin 50s on it, and it's a little bit spicier inside.
Yeah, right.
So it went from about 200-ish horsepower before to it's about 200 kilowatts now at the wheels.
Right.
Which is a small jump.
Just a little one.
About 70 horsepower.
Right. So is that still the same engine?
Same engine.
The one that hit the tree, essentially?
It had... probably not the best thing balance-wise, but the engine always was a parts bin engine from work, and it just happened to make the power it made and be reliable and sound cool. It had an aluminium crank pulley on it, which for a 2.4, that's not a very good counterweighted crank in it. The aluminium pulley probably saved the engine from, and also running electric water pump on it still, because when you hit stuff in the front, it tries to, the water pump, the shaft for the pulley and the basically the fan bit on the inside, it'll just try and center punch that through number one bore.
Yep.
So because that wasn't on there, got away so lucky. All it did was it cracked the headers, which I've managed to fix. It still needs new headers though. New crankshaft pulley. We've put a new crank in it anyway. And intake manifold, it snapped it in half and killed a carburetor. So, and when it snapped the intake manifold off, it pulled it off the head.
Yeah.
So luckily, it didn't have the longest bolts for the holes that are in the head, so now it's just got longer threads cleaned up and longer bolts in it.
So it's put like 5mm thread, but it's all right because you got the other 10 to go.
Yeah, because they stand to have like 20mm thread into the head, which for me, that's just extra weight. But so it's always had a shorter bolt in it.
Yeah.
And it's easier to pull on and off when you don't have to wind the thing because the Allen-headed bolts and in the way of the flange for the carbies on it because it's all short. It's just run a shorter bolt. It's easier. But now it's got longer bolts on the back half of it.
That's unreal, man. I'll have to go out and have a look at the water pump setup because I want to do a remote electric jobby on mine as well at some point. I want to sort of revisit everything and sort of shift stuff into the back and sort of just fix up weight distribution and all that sort of gear. So
I found with the, originally when I built my car, it was rear radiator from the start and it was mechanical pump, but no thermostat. And it wasn't until I'd run the car for nearly 2 years and I did a layout that had enough on throttle area with high RPM that it had a cavitation problem.
Yeah, right.
So then we figured we'll just jam an electric pump on it at the back, and then there was a temporary fix in between two events. It was in between a DCA round at Archerfield, and the next weekend back up there was Cash Kings. It was in between those two events. We're like, okay, we'll just jam a pump in the back of it to get it through this weekend, and then we'll have another look at it. And we worked out that's what it was. And then for a while it was, and then I was like, why don't we just take the mechanical one off, run a short little fan belt for alternator. That way if it ever chucks a belt off it, you can just run the battery down if needed. and it's not an immediate concern that it's got no build on it, where if it had mechanical pump, it's like, well, it's a bit wild.
Yeah.
So, and then just the electric water pump on it was always awesome. And about a similar time then too, we even put a unvented boot lid on it, and it didn't affect it at all because the pump just pumps the water through, and you just have big enough fans on the radiator that it never got hot. So
that's cool.
Yeah. And always make sure when you put the radiator in the back, the radiator cap's high enough than the engine,
yep.
Which visually might be a problem in a ute, depending on the size of the
tray. Should be all right, I think.
Yeah.
Because it'll have sort of some uprights for a cage coming through as well, so I can sort of sit a little higher up on that.
And be blended with the cage, so it's not too much of an eyesore. Because in a ute, they can either look really cool or like, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I want to try and avoid that.
Yeah. you just want the what is that, because people go, is that a Navara? Not what is that? The back.
That's right. That's right. So the fix of that car?
Very long and hard. So I've done my panel beating apprenticeship now as such. Luckily, next door to work is, we call him Fast Eddie. He is panel beater by trade, and in my dad's young years of rallying, Eddie also did further works on how to fix a 120Y from crashing in a rally accident.
So you got good experience.
So I got some good tips. So I did all the work, but I didn't do anything unless he'd pointed me what to do. So he's got access to, I think he's now purchased an auto robot, but he had access to it before. And we got my car onto it, cut bits and pieces off the front, gave it a little bit of a pull to take some tension off it. Then I actually had a shell without a roof that had a good front on it, and we unpicked both front ends off the cars and then cleaned up where it could all join, and doing it all as Fast Eddie instructed me to do, basically.
Yep.
We sat the front on, and before you make it all permanent, you either run just a couple of little tech screws or one or two spot welds just to hold it there, and then measure it off a good car if you've got one, if you don't have measurements out of a book. And he's like, oh, not exactly happy with it. Need to measure it off a car before you go and do that. Because I'm like, oh, it looks good. Can we just weld it on? He's like, no. I'm like, come on. So we found some points to measure off, went home, measured it off another car, spot on. So then just welded it as it was, so we could have just welded it. And
you could have
not cared, and it would have been spot on. Yeah. So, and it actually is straighter than what it was from the factory now, that car.
Wow.
So, because when Eddie's the one responsible for the roll cage in it, he does friggin' awesome work. And he said when he made the front legs and the main hoop in the car, he said, are you running a window rubber or not? Because on one side, it doesn't touch the bottom of the window sort of channel, but on the other side it touches. He said, are you going to run a window rubber? Are you going to glue the screen in? Because on an old Datsun, not that many young people know that you have a rubber to hold the window in.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't have a rubber. I'm not going to pay for one, so I'll just glue it in. Because at the time I was very tight. And he said, okay, cool. But now the bottom of the windscreen sits the same on both sides. With the measurements everywhere else being straight. We weren't fussed on where that was. We were measuring from other points. So it's now a way better car than what it was before I got to it anyway. So a blessing in disguise is the car is so much better than what it was before.
Yeah.
Just from being straight there. The old front end always had little bits of rust here and there that was always on the to-do one day job. Where now?
Well, they're gone now.
Yeah, gone. Very gone. So it's now got a new front that's way better condition, never really had rust in it like the other one did, and he's on the rest of the car straighter.
Yeah, awesome.
So, and then once we got the front on it, put a new floor in it out of the same car, but put a transmission tunnel in the floor this time, because before it used to be, if you blew up a gearbox,
it was tapping the tunnel.
Oh, like
trying to come through to you.
Like, to politely describe the job, it's just a lot of beep. Just a lot of beeping and swearing and carrying on, because you had to lower the gearbox and the engine out of the car downwards and then it was a drama still getting the gearbox off the engine.
Yeah, right, okay.
Because the car was in the way. Where now, you don't even need a socket to get up into tight spots. It's just, like, you can use a spanner to get it all, and you don't have to, you can avoid touching the car even using a spanner, which takes up a lot of room, and the box just doesn't go near anything. So, can go fit a Mack truck gearbox to it now. That's if I wanted to, it'd fit.
That's awesome. That's unreal. So, are you still... You still all fiberglass hanging off
Part of the boot lid and bonnet is a rally car.
Yep.
And the rear spoiler. But it's still plastic window, the doors are all gutted. It's got front inner arches now. That was one benefit to putting the front on it if it was gonna stay a rally car. So but I've got a whole set of panels left over from it being a drift car, which means the new shell I've picked up will just get all of that stuff, and I've got all of the rear suspension, front suspension from it. It was a drift car, so some people are like, oh, you need to get into a different car that's more like everyone else and you can do better. I'm like, yeah, but financially I can do that and never go drifting again, or I can do it this way, go drifting again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And to store all that stuff I've got, it's easier if it's on a shell.
Yeah.
So... sort of a bit of a win-win.
Rather than sort of sitting somewhere tucked in a corner or just and taking up room on
doors
the floor.
And bonnets and boot lids for a car, when they're off the car, take up more room than a car.
Yeah, for sure.
So annoying.
Yep. I know all about that.
Yeah. So hopefully going to try and get into some YouTube filming and stuff as I build the new drift car along.
Yep.
So there's probably... like a whole video of time lapse of me spending about 10 hours cutting stuff off a car to make it a drift shell. And a lot of things on this car I'll be doing from the start, around like the other car. I sort of half-assed in a way, lightweighting it or making it lighter. But this time around, it'll be from the start and much nicer of a car.
Is that more because now you know what you need to do rather than sort of at that point you might have been learning a bit more?
Yeah, I wasn't very patient with going about how to fabricate stuff. So in spots it used to look quite agricultural, the other car, where this one will be, I've done a lot more stuff in between now and then, so learnt heaps, do stuff slower, it's better, and then it never falls off. Where before a lot of the fixes that would be done to it would be more just spending that extra 10 minutes, but now because I didn't spend an extra 10 minutes, you've got to spend 2 hours on it.
Yep.
And you've already had the inconvenience of it fell off or broke because it wasn't strong enough. Yeah. So learn how to go about it in a nicer way to make the car lighter, but then you can put weight back where you want it in a more efficient spot, where before it was kind of, I'll just cut this off, half cut that off, where this time it'll be properly take off all the little brackets on firewalls and stuff that aren't needed, which also when you're working on the car, you don't cut yourself to bits. And so, currently looking at a taped up hand from a razor blade incident at work.
Yep.
I was trying not to cut myself that day, but
that's exactly how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I will not cut myself.
There's times you don't think about it. You get to the end and go, I didn't cut myself. That was amazing. And then other times you're like, hold my hand here. Scrape this way, it'll be fine, and then something happens, and you've got a razor blade sticking out of your finger.
Awesome, man. Yeah, so all that sort of stuff, I guess, I hear it time and time again where people have spent the time working on their car. When it comes time to do another one, they just know so much more and are able to plan it out so much better because... Like you said, you know, it's a time thing as well. You just want to get that car out and running again, which is one thing I need to spend more time thinking that way rather than I need to do all of this to get all of this stuff right.
Yeah.
Where I've taken it out 2 times in almost 3 years now.
Yeah.
But all these other people, like, just get it done so I can go out driving. That's kind of more the mentality. But then when it comes time to sort of reshell or something like that, you've got such a better background to sort of draw off and go, okay, well, this is what worked last time, this is what didn't, and this is the way we're going to go about it. And it takes... Well, we spoke to Mike Lake recently, and it took him 6 weeks to reshell his whole BMW.
And it's, what by the sound of it, it's a way better car than what the old ones ever were.
It looks amazing. It drives amazing.
And I remember one thing he said, the difference between using tech screws and riv nuts, when you've got to pull something apart, tech screws mad the first time, but when you've got to pull something apart and you can just wind a little bolt into a riv nut to hold like a bit of harness or something, it's so much nicer than trying to go, okay, the tech screw's got no thread left in it anymore.
That's right. The second time you put that tech screw in, it's screwed.
And then doing stuff probably the first time, then to sometimes, depending on what it is, or like even a guard bolt on a 120Y, they always rust out. So from the start, you sit the guard on there, drill it.
That's a factory feature.
Put a brand new riv nut in it, and not the first time you want to pull a guard off, you've got 2.5 bolts hanging out of it, snapped off, because the thread picked up in the original bit. You just, from scratch, and then it's new and comes apart nicer and easier.
Yep.
And unlike factory, one thing I did pretty quickly on mine is to get a front guard off, you've got to pull the wiper scuttle off. To do that, you've got to pull the wiper gear off. To do all that, but you've got to pull bonnet off it, because it's got one or two bolts up under the wiper scuttle panel, and it's like, don't put the bolt in. Put two or three in at the front that hold it nice. And don't put that one in, because if you've got to pull it off, you're not going to. You've got a 5-minute rule. You're not going to spend 15 minutes pulling the bonnet and wipers off it to undo that. That's, and you're not going to trash the guard if it doesn't need to be trashed, to just rip it off.
Yeah. Next minute, you're back out on track. No bonnet, no guards.
Which I've had a crash before at Mount Gambier, and had a man, he's like, oh, we'll just pull the whole guard off. And I'm like, that's like, it fixes the problem of the wheel that's not in the right spot anymore. It's not going to rub the guard, but I'd rather it rub the guard and look just like it touched something, rather than look like a missile car, especially when you got people's names on the car and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you can make it still look nice but patched, it's way better than just things hanging off it everywhere.
For sure, for sure. So you're currently focusing on rally more so, is that right, or are you kind of still splitting your time between the two?
Still doing a bit of drifting stuff, helping out a mate from Victoria, Jory. But he's had some problems recently with SR20 life and all that. A lot of people know about that. I'm in his ear all the time. Why don't you just put a KA in it? So I think he's going to miss round two of High Tech, which is pretty spewing about, because we made it to, or when I say we, I'm just the one spotting for him, telling him if he's doing heaps sick or not very good in his ear. We were fourth in the top three battle against Kieran at Winton.
Yep.
He was hoping to build on that, so not going to be. I think he'll be there spectating, throwing empties at the fence for round two. And for round three, hopefully going to have the car back together and stronger finish to the end of the year.
Yeah, nice.
But so helping him crew and do stuff, but for driving-wise, got a couple of rallies planned this year. Hopefully we do more than 10 kilometres like we did last year. And then considering, again, the rally car that'll stay a rally car, might do a rally Matsuri or something with my brother and a few other mates at the end of the year.
Yep.
So, see how we go.
See what happens, eh?
But yeah, not much driving, drifting-wise, but plenty of rally stuff.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Like, there's no real rush here in Sydney, is there, to get something together, because there's not much going on. Hopefully by the end of the year we're seeing more happening. Unfortunately, the Revolution boys were trying to get something sorted and it kind of fell through. Now they've had to go to Raleigh, I believe.
Yeah, I think I saw something about Raleigh.
Yeah.
They're going to go there twice, I think.
Yeah.
Calendar, so four rounds instead of three.
So, I mean, essentially that's all New South Wales has at the moment. We still do have, the skid ban and the wet pan at Sydney Motorsport Park, but
I think a lot of people go, figure eight's boring, and to me, so is Archerfield, so is Mount Gambier, so is Calder Park, so is QR, but they're what you make of them.
Yeah,
like, I've been to figure eight before and had a mat, it was a wet night, there's still mud on the inside of the roof of the car I crashed from doing it this wet night there, because at the time, it didn't have any side windows in it, and people were like, oh, you're going to put windows in it, it's going to rain, I'm like, it's going to fog up. I was like, catch 22, not see anything, or just get covered in mud.
Be wet, yeah.
And it used to leak anyway, so you still get wet and covered in mud. So, but there was myself, my brother Harry in his 120Y, and cousin Jake in his, at the time, stock as a rock S15. Like, it had a rear muffler taken off it, and it was manual converted from standard. Like, nothing going for it. And I think we did like 200 laps that night on the figure eight.
Yeah.
Three-car training around, swapping, like pulling off through the little left-hander, lead car running real wide, letting the other two pass. And we did so many laps. It was a freaking awesome night. And you go, it was on the figure eight in the wet. And that's a very, very hard and not the most fun track in the wet. But if you make it, it is.
Yeah.
And it's like even Mount Gambier, if you look at the track on a map, it's like it's kind of 2.5 corners, not quite 3. But if you make it what you want, it's one of the best things you can drive on the planet.
Yep.
So people get a little bit, oh, the figure eight's crap. But when if you line up some mates that you want to go there and shred with, it's a good night.
Yeah, and when you're talking about 200 laps, that's a lot of time in a seat. That's a lot of time. Especially sort of in the wet, getting that control and really sort of knowing where you can put the grip down in the wet. It's good experience anyway.
There was a lot of close moments.
I bet.
There was a moment where I tuned my brother up a couple of times by accident, and I was thinking, this is going to be big if it goes wrong, because he's the lead car. I'm the second car, and cousin Jake in this immaculate road car is right behind me. If I've just turned him around, we're in a sandwich here, it's not good. And then even Harry's got a bit of footage. He's right up alongside Jake, and Jake over-rotates, and the cars, like, spin nose-to-nose as they're coming to a stop, one backwards, one forwards, and it's a cool bit of footage.
Not what you want in the wet.
That close is fine, but in the moment it feels like it's always going to touch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was a good night out there that night. I think that was probably 2 years ago now. Long time.
Yeah. So was the crash that you had in Rally, that was 1 year ago almost?
It was May 7th, 2022. Yeah, so it's coming up on a year in the next fortnight or so.
Nice. That's are we driving that day?
Nope. Going away with the girlfriend that day. Yeah. So
nice.
Dad will be having a run up there and a few other people, but I was going to be busy, because that's the same weekend as High Tech. I was going to be busy with jewellery, but so I wasn't going to do the rally, and sort of not that keen on going back to Orange just yet.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Get my redemption another year. So I was having a look at the calendar the other day and come to the conclusion with girlfriend Morgan that everything we've got time off for is a car event. Why don't we go away camping or driving around the countryside and just do something that's us and not rally car or drift car involved?
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be doing.
That's fair enough too. Going back to that actually, you mentioned the clay and pine needles. Obviously, pine needles, you're just kind of sliding across the top of them because they roll. Mm. What does clay do?
Clay, if it's like how you see it at a speedway, is awesome. If it's a drop wetter than that, it's like ice.
Yeah,
ice, right, or like a painted concrete floor with a bit of sand on it.
Yeah.
It's very, very average to try.
Just no grip.
Oh, there'd be more grip on wet grass than mud, I reckon. Because it just fills the tread of the tire up, and yeah, a passenger very quickly, which in a straight line on a straight bit of road, you can kind of just point before you get there and hold on. Don't brake, don't turn, don't do anything. But yeah, I'd sort of had the car in the wrong spot, a bit distracted with the gearbox trying to get it into the next gear, or if I could get it out of that gear to go down. And once you're offline where we were, no coming back from that.
With your tyres, are they designed, like the rally tyres, are they designed in such a way that they kind of throw clay and mud out of them?
They are designed to self-clean, but clay is pretty sticky stuff.
Yeah.
So, and the worst thing I probably did at the time was try and stop before trying to turn, because where I was, it was, well, not so much the wrong thing, but the corner wasn't there yet. We were still on a straight. But because I was offline, no chance. And then as we're watching the next few cars go past, because when you're with railing, you have a driver's seat. So if you haven't done much, you start towards the back. So we were probably 10 cars from the back, because I'd done one rally sprint before and kind of off that. They put me where they put me, and we're looking at the road. There was a little bit of wheel tracks, and at the bottom of that is a little bit of rock, so grip. but there was one XL and he stepped out of that and I just put my hands in the air and turned around. I was like, he's going to just kill the back of my car. And he pulled up just next to it, and where trees should be, there was no tree on that little row because it was forestry. That row of trees didn't have a tree that close to the road. And I'm like, you arsey prick. If that was me, it'd be where my car was. But yeah, and then he just drove off and I'm like, Jesus. And he actually had in-car of that, and you could see him, like, out of control. Same sort of thing as me, making pizzas on the wheel, shitting himself.
Bit of a 5
and you could just see my car just float past outside of one of the windows, and it's like, Jesus. But, yeah, clay, when it's that wet in the shade and pine needles, it's not your friend.
So what series is it that you race?
That was part of the AMSAG series, but this year, I'm going to do a couple of rallies under Motorsport Australia in the New South Wales Rally Championship or the East Coast Classic Championship, they call it. It's got a couple of different banners depending on the event you enter. So there's sort of two series. One runs under AASA, one runs under CAMS or Motorsport Australia. So the first one I'm going to do this year will be at Narooma under Motorsport Australia, which is pretty good down there. I've navigated down there before. It's good. So hopefully driving is similar luck. but yeah, so yeah, don't be afraid to reach out if anyone wants to know more on how they can get involved. And
it's one thing, like, I've always wanted to get to rally events, but I don't even know where to start looking.
In the bush.
Yeah, that's right.
Just on the correct weekend.
Go bushwalking and listen for it.
And it's one thing to hear something like a drift car or even a rally car on their own at like a racetrack or something. But when you hear a noise like that out in the forest, it just hits way different.
Yeah.
Like some of the lamppost inspectors that have drift cars might know the sound. but yeah, to even just rally drifting people when you take them to a rally, the noise in the bush, they're pretty blown away by just how it echoes and sounds. And
yeah, everything sort of bounces back at you off trees. And
yeah. And then the rallying that I'm going to be doing this year is what they call blind rallying. And when you explain that to a drifter, they just lose their marbles pretty hard.
So what is that?
So everyone knows what the WRC is, and you can just hear the navigator on all the in-cars, and they're just rattling off stuff. They get two passes, I believe, to drive over every stage, and they can ride in every corner, every rock, every tree they drive past. They can ride in as much information as they want. Blind rallying, you don't drive the course to begin with. You're not allowed to. And you get given a road book that navigator can read, and it's got things that are out of character of the road. So you will start the stage, and it might be 1.5 Ks, turn right, and in the meantime, the road's going to be up to 200 Ks an hour, and it might start slowly winding, slowly getting slower, but it's not really out of character, so you're on your own. And the navigator's counting down to this junction. You get there, so things like junctions or big humps or dips will be cautioned because they're out of character to the road. But then if you get a bit of road that's really humpy, the only calls you get are big ones because the character of the road is for humps.
Yep.
So you might get some caution boards next to them, but you don't get calls for them.
Yep.
So the navigator's got to be, especially in the hump areas, they've got to be switched on with their resetting of the territory for distances and stuff. But it, as some people say, it sorts the men from the boys when you go pace noting or blind railing, because blind railing is a big adventure.
Yeah. Wow. So what's a Terra Trip? I've heard you mention that a couple of times.
A Terra Trip is, you can run a gearbox probe or a wheel probe, and it basically just counts distance.
Yep.
But it counts it in what they call a cumulative number and an intermediate number. So for the whole stage, you'll pull up at the start, you'll reset the top, and you'll reset the bottom on a Terra Trip, or a Monnet, or I think some old guys still use what they call a Brants or a Howder. They're just different brands. They all do the same thing. And throughout the stage, you'll reset the intermediate number because that is the distance between each call. And then if you ever get lost from that, you can refer to the cumulative number to find out where you are distance-wise to work out where you should be in the book.
Yep.
So the navigator's got to do a bit of backwards.
So there is a lot going on for the navigator. They're not just reading something off the sheet.
They've got to count up to a number in their head. but at the same time, they've got to count the driver down, but also still be reading the book, keeping track of where they are, reset it in the right spot. Yeah. It's not just the navigator gets a free ride. At some rallies, it kind of is like that, where there's not many calls. But then you get some rallies, and every 300 metres, they've got to do all the countdown and everything, and it's like, okay, you're out of breath, you've done 8Ks, and it's a 30K stage. And there's a navigator that's like...
Yeah, unreal. Have you run navigator like that before?
Yeah, heaps of times. I've done a couple of pace-noted events, and I get a little bit too distracted by how the driver does pace notes versus how I wouldn't. It just plays on my mind too much.
Yep.
And then I've done a lot of blind rally navigating, which is sort of, I think it's better, but just means it's not as much homework before it, and you don't have to have as much time off work as well. That's a big difference with blind to pace noting for a lot of people is you've got to have the Friday and or the Thursday off to pace note everything, which means you've got to have either a service chute or a recce car to drive around in the bush, and just a lot of time and expense.
So when you do recces, you've got to actually drive the track, but what you're driving it at what, like 5, 10 kilometres?
60 Ks is the, whatever the forest speed limit is.
Right, okay.
Usually it's 60 Ks. Sometimes you get 80.
So you're trying to get through that as quick as possible?
But like, it's not closed when you recce it either.
Yep.
So you've got to drive it inside of road conditions.
Yep.
And the way some guys do it is they'll go off a map to work out the severity of the corner to write down their number system, or they'll use a pointer on the top of the dash, and then the steering wheel will look like a clock, basically. It'll have lines and numbers on it, and then the severity of the corner will be how sharp they turn the wheel is a certain number. Some guys use 1 to 5, 1 to 6, 1 to 10, and then you get people that'll use it 10 to 1. So for most people, 10 is flat. Fast as you can go. You can go, like, it's barely a corner on a freeway, where one is, like, back on itself. Hairpin, handbrake. Probably spectators there watching you, expecting you to come in like a mad bat. Have the thing on the lock stops.
Yep.
And then you watch, like, old videos of Ari Vatanen, and it's easy, medium, and hard. And it's like, really? 3? Some guys struggle for enough information with 1 to 10, and they're like... just very vague.
Yep.
So, but then it's pretty amazing when you watch guys at that, and they probably go that fast because they didn't quite have enough information to know that the corner was as sharp as they remembered it.
Yeah, right.
And then they just get around it, keep doing that.
So your preferred method is blind?
Yeah. Like, it is cool when you know a piece of road and you can just have the thing in the right gear chucked, like if it's a crest with a corner on it, you can just have the thing chucked before the crest and just drive blind on throttle over this crest around a corner. It's really cool, but when you get a bunch of guys and you all point at the same piece of road, you just haven't been there before, you don't know, and then you just get to the end, it takes a lot of the car aspect out of it as well, and it brings it to more of a driver navigator.
Yeah.
So... but one thing that does help some people is in blind rallying, if you're a local and you've been there before, that makes a big difference because it's in the middle of, you haven't pace noted it, but you have been there before, so you know that it's, you don't have to slow heaps for this crest, but you don't have to really.
Yeah.
You can just...
so what can you do in preparation, apart from do it like recces and things like that, in the off time, if you know there's something coming up, can you do anything in preparation for that as far as driving goes and seat time?
Yes and no. To get on a proper bit of forest road is very hard and you can't do it really. But we do, there is a car club just out of, well, in Sydney that has a grounds at a place called Hampton, up the mountains, and you can hire that out for rally testing. But the roads in there, they're not a proper forest road, but they do get your eye in, and they get you really, like, if you haven't driven for a while, it's not that much to hire that, spend a morning or a whole day up there. You get your eye in, feel the car a bit, but it's not relevant to a proper rally stage to fully set the car up or tweak it for where you're going. You've really got to go there and see how it is.
Yep.
So, and a lot of the older rally guys, they always spew when the first stage of the rally is a 30K. Like, oh, hoping for a 10K to wake us up and get in the rhythm, not try and get into a rhythm for 30Ks off the bat.
Yep.
Which, yeah, that sorts the morning people out from the afternoon people, oh, that's for sure.
That's like a 30K.
But yeah, 30Ks isn't the longest you'll do, but sometimes you have 40. There's a stage down at Batemans Bay, depending on how they run it, it's about 45Ks.
Yep.
And last year I navigated in the Alpine Rally, there was a 60K, or 59.6, and that was big stage.
What kind of times are you doing, like dealing with on something like a 45 or a 60K stage?
The 60K one, I think we did it in about, I think it was 39 minutes from memory. But the average speed was up there. Like there was bits where it was quite tight, and then there was bits where you were doing 180.
Yep.
Just going like, these are fast corners.
Yep. So over that time, you're kind of averaging a little under 120.
Yeah. Average speed gets up there for that.
Which is still moving along. That's unreal.
So, and then you get points where the road is as wide as the car doing that, and it's a big drop-off with trees on one side and a big bank on the other, and then you get bits where it's like a freeway, and you just hang the thing gutter from gutter to gutter, not having to back off or worry about anything. You can just pick a line and go.
Yep.
And then, yeah, and then the beauty of rallying is you'll be doing 180 or so, and then there's a crest coming. It's not in the book. So is it flat? Is it not flat? Has it got a corner after it? I don't know. Guys that build roads in forests always have this thing where you get a crest and then you put a corner on it. So then you've got to commit to, are we going to back right off or are we just going to have a go? But does it go left? Does it go right? Can you see if it goes left? Can you see if it goes right? So you get a lot of navigators, and I was doing it for the guy that was driving. If it's a right-hand corner and the navigator can see further in, you can call if it opens, or so you can get back on the throttle just that bit sooner, or it tightens, so you can get yourself out of trouble.
Is there any giveaways, like as far as trees? Like if you're sort of coming up to a crest, does the trees help you out at all? Or any
tree
kind of
lines landmarks? Do, but sometimes they can catch you out. There's plenty of bits of road where you'll be following a fence line, trees. You're just looking ahead, just flat out looking at the tree line. You'll get to a crest again, usually, and the road pisses off left or right.
Yep.
And the tree line keeps going. But if you're coming up to something that might be a junction, you can see, and visually if it's cresty, you can see that the trees are there and you know you've got to turn sooner or later.
Yep.
That you can get a rough guide on when you probably need to start braking if the terrain is a bit blind.
Yep.
But yeah, it's all a big adventure. And then even the service crew, the first rally I'm doing this year, I've conned my mate Jory into, instead of me crewing for him at drifting, I'm like, you can come crew for me doing a rally. He'll have to navigate in the ute to find spectator points or refuel points. He'll have to do his own bit of navigating like we have to do in the cars to get there, or follow someone else that knows. So it's everyone's a bit more involved in the whole thing working.
Yeah, gotcha.
So where we're drifting, you can do it just yourself, ute, car, trailer. You don't need a pit crew. Where we're railing, you need a crew, but they're also involved. It's not just standing around to help jerry can fuel into it at service. So they're going to have a big adventure doing that.
Yeah, right.
So
nice, man. Team Door Bangers, is that still a thing?
Quietly it is.
Quietly?
My cousin's on to me, oh, not part of the team, you don't go drifting anymore. I'm like, well, if we wind back time a little bit, there was a time where it was just me the one doing all the drifting and no one else had a car, and now you have cars and I've got to build another one.
Yep.
So it will be more of a thing soon.
Yeah, gotcha.
So just with the world shutting down and then coming out of it, and in the meantime, I want to go rallying as well. But I've only got one car. So
what was that like, having the one car to do drift and rally?
you can't do it properly. You can do it, which I was very firm in, yeah, you can do it, but the people that were more telling me you can't weren't necessarily saying you can't, but you shouldn't, because you can't do it properly. You can do it, but not to the fullest extent that you can. So, like now with the car, how it is, we were testing a couple of weeks ago, and it is twice the car it was when I drove it and crashed it last year. Like, just everything's so much better because the things you learn the first time you do things, it's just way different car, which you can't have all those things when next week you're going to turn into a drift car again.
That's right. So what kind of things were you doing to sort of switch between the two? Were you changing out suspension and stuff like that?
In the front, as a drift car, it's got modified knuckles, different steering rack, modified cross member. The front shocks I use for railing, I can actually lower them enough to use them for drifting, and they work quite well. In the rear, it's got a whole different shock. Underbody, wheels and tyres, mud flaps, and previously I'd put makeshift inner guards in it to stop mud going everywhere, and a sump guard. A bit lost. Yeah, so to go from drifting to railing, standard cross member. As a drift car, I run a standard S13 steering rack, where as a rally car, I run the high cast one, so it's a little bit more direct.
Yep.
Different control arms that are stronger, so a hard race style arm as opposed to, as a drift car, I had a GK Tech Superlock arm in it, which is all right for drifting, but when you want to be on the brakes down a hill and it's rough, it'll just rip those arms to bits. So you run different. Standard knuckle, stronger control arms, unmodified cross member, and slightly different rack. So that way you keep all your bump steers and stuff right with travel. Because in a drift car, bumps near makes a difference if you're on the soft side, but really don't deal with much suspension travel, whereas in a rally car, it's not uncommon for it to go full droop to full bump in about half a second.
Yep.
But if you do that in the meantime, it's like turning the steering wheel half a turn. Makes it very undesirable to drive.
Yeah, absolutely. so that sounds like a lot of work to sort of go between the two, especially if you've got like a back-to-back weekend or something like that.
Yeah, and in the meantime, different panels on it to make it a little bit safer when you throw it into the bush. If you have steel stuff on it, it's a bit, bit more safer than the fiberglass. But also, too, with the larger wheels on it, the wheel arches have to be a lot taller than what they are as a drift car, because the wheel is just physically bigger and goes up further.
Travels more, yeah.
Yeah, and you don't have a tyre stretched on it, so the wheel has to probably be in a little bit more from what looks cool, because with a live axle, when the wheel goes up, it'll just rip a flare or an arch or something off it.
Yeah.
Where when it's a drift car, it doesn't go up that far and just touches a tyre, so it's not a problem. But with a rally tyre, it would be touching it statically without having to drive it anywhere.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah, two cars is the go.
Yep, can confirm.
Yeah. What kind of weight are you looking at in that? I know it was light as hell.
I haven't weighed it, but I would think it's about a ton now. That's full of fuel, spare tyre, rally tyres, steel panels, but the lightweight windows and stuff.
Yep.
So, which is, in a rally car, there's sort of, the weight doesn't make too much of a difference. What sort of helps with stopping and going, but if you have the car too light, it gets affected too much on the rougher roads.
Yep.
So, the guys in Victoria that run their roads are like, the roughest bit of road is a very good bit of road. So, you can have a lighter car that's a little bit lower, and it works really well down there, but up here, when you run out around places like Oberon, Bathurst, Orange, or even up near Port Macquarie, it's rougher. So you've got to have a little bit more ground clearance, a little bit more suspension travel, and have the car up a bit higher. But a little bit of weight keeps it more stable on the road.
Yeah.
So if you watch like a little like a big trophy truck, like something that Toby Price would race, and that Fink, and it just looks like a freaking powerboat over the whoops.
Yeah.
But then
you look at the work that suspension's doing. Like the truck is just dead straight all the way through.
Yeah, it's
dead
just level.
And that suspension is going to town. Yeah.
But if you watch something lighter than that, you can see it gets pogoed around.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, you don't want to be too light, but also with a rally car, you've, depending on what your light weighting, you'll drastically reduce the strength of stuff very quickly.
Yep.
So you've got to be careful what is light, what's not, and what is really heavy and strong and what's not. So around 1,000, the car's not very big, so around 1,000 it's doing all right, even if it's over 1,000 a bit, and it's way overpowered now.
Yeah.
Like that car as a drift car went from, oh, that dude with the little cars turned up again that's got no horsepower, to now I'm the guy with the equivalent 1,000 horsepower thing in Pro-Am or something. Yeah, well, like in railing, like lots of horsepower is sort of 200, and now I've got a fair bit over that. Like it's too much car.
Yeah.
So, but you can never have too much.
Absolutely. So this afternoon, once hopefully this rain lifts at least a little bit, you're going to spot for your brother Harry at the Australian Drift Club Figure 8, F8.
Yeah, they're doing a qualifier night. So what that is for is to get more practice at each of the rounds. They're not going to do a qualifying, but to start the year, it's got to be a lucky dip out of a hat, which I think some people weren't a fan of that last year. So this time it's going to be a qualifier night, so then everyone gets a rough idea. So then come round one, you just do a lot more practice, a lot more time in the car, more bang for buck as such for the drivers, and then they just jump straight into battles. So tonight they're going to practice and alternate different layouts they're thinking of running for the series, and also do like qualifying battles.
Yeah, right.
They'll do a couple of battles each, I think, in possibly different layouts even, so that everyone gets like a rough form guide of where they're at, so then come round one, they just go, this guy's top, this guy's bottom, but it doesn't necessarily the first or last, and not at a disadvantage, so. Yep. And then from there, it'll be championship standings to see who starts where.
Yeah, cool. So is this like a fairly grassroots sort of event?
Think so. I think there'll still be some pretty reasonable cars turn up.
Yep.
But yeah, it's aimed at guys probably like my brother that have probably done a fair bit of driving but never done competition stuff.
Yep.
So it gets their foot into the door of maybe they'll enter Super Drift later in the year or consider like a local high tech round if there's one again. So yeah,
if ever there's one again. Yep.
Not this year anyway. local this year is Winton.
That's right. With that said, are you heading down to Calder Park next weekend?
Not Calder Park. I'll be down there for round three because Jory's not running. And
so round three is at Winton again, is that right?
Yes, but the back ends, I believe, where the first round was the old front straight.
Yep.
So, and hopefully a little bit better weather than last time. So, because it was really good, and there was a chance for us to get some wet practice in on the Saturday this year at round one, but it was a pretty hot day. It came over black, threatened to rain, and as it sort of got a bit light, then it did rain. And we weren't quick enough to, we were in the middle of fueling it and putting some tyres on it for later. We weren't quick enough to get him back out there to at least get one or two laps in because the track just dried up so quickly.
Yeah.
Like the difference, we spent 5 minutes in the pits and the track went from full wet to, like, we were just before it rained, on his way into pulling into the pit bay, it started raining because it needed fuel and tyres, which is why we were in the pits. Put fuel and tyres in it, ummed and ahed about going out for about 20 seconds. I went, no, go out, get a lap in, just see what it's like in case it rains for tomorrow. It was dry. He left the pits and stood on it and just gripped up and took off up the road. I'm like, really? It's not even wet anymore. Even he could sit on the grass nearly again on the hill. It just all dried up that quick. So,
that's a shame. That was a super patchy,
very
super patchy event.
And I think Kieran and Jory, the only two guys that beat them in their top four battle, were double entered. So they had a form guide of what the track was like.
Yeah,
where everyone they had versed before that, they're all on equal terms with having a punt with who got to lead or chase first on if you could just sit back and just follow the lead. Which we got a bit gifted on in both of our battles before that were wet. We could just go, well, thank God we're chasing first. We'll just enter behind, see what happens.
Yep.
And there was, I think on the other side of the tree, it might have been Kieran. I think he led and still did all right. Didn't have to, didn't get like a bit of a get out of jail free card like we sort of got. But then, yeah, come top four time, Kieran and Joy just got bested by two guys that had had twice the amount of time out on track.
Yeah.
So, and then it actually turned out over that weekend, the Pro-Am guys were as quick, if not quicker, than half the pro field.
Yeah, right.
So the practice they were doing, they weren't, or not practice, but the battles they were doing, they weren't chopping and changing a tyre. They were just staying on the Pro-Am tyre because it was actually faster. So, yeah, they did. They had more track time with the car just in the right spot. It wasn't like a traditional day. Versing one of those guys, you wouldn't be worried about how much time they've had on track because they're going from pro tyre to Pro-Am tyre, which normally is only a really excellent driver that's got their head in the game can do that properly.
Yeah.
But that day, because they were just on the same tyre, they get pressured from the pro guys and go, it's Pro-Am. Shrug their shoulders. Yeah. Not have to worry about it too much.
Yeah, right.
So, and those, but those guys still did, still got to drive the car. And those guys just, like they did, I think they both went into the top eight in pro, which is like, they probably earned their spot, beating the other Pro-Am guys as well, because they're just driving well. Sort
of doing that gets you so much more time on track too.
Yeah. And on a day like that, where the weather's patchy, you know where it's patchy.
Yeah.
And if you can throw it big on entry, or if you have to be reserved, or, yeah. Especially after a day of dry practice, then when you put rubber, put water down.
Yeah.
It's deadly.
Yeah.
Once you've had semi-slick cars out there.
You saw so many cars just slide off the first corner.
Oh. And I think in one of the battles with Jory in the wet, the first corner, they did like a pirouette spin, and I've just gone, oh, this is going to be big. And Jory's got it on camera. There was like 100 mil in it between just killing front end of two cars, or they just pirouetted next to each other.
Yeah.
Kept going. I was like, that's nuts. It's not somewhere you want to be in a wet.
No, not at all. Well, we'll get over to some questions from past guests. Coming from Ben Meir, it's a two-part question. So the biggest wreck?
Got that covered.
So we've got that covered. I think we've spoken about that. Yeah. Best ghetto fix?
Best ghetto fix would have been at Mount Gambier, the first time I went.
Yep.
Car started running a bit average. And I'm like, man, just won't idle. It was real aggressive when you give it a rev, like the timing or something wasn't right. And so something's not right. Turned it off. This was in line, waiting to have a go. Went to start it, and I'm like, it's like the timing is like screwed all the way up on it. And as I was thinking that, you can just hear the starter motor just getting the head of it, just smashed off it, trying to start the engine. I'm like, this is good. It's Saturday, 10 minutes before I want to qualify. And got it into the pits, pulled the dizzy cap off it, and the advance curve in the dizzy, or the, it has a little blade that was holding it fixed, because it was a fixed dizzy at the time. Yep. It had broken. I'm like, how am I going to fix this? Absolutely no one's going to have a spare dizzy here for a Datsun. So I've got it out, and I'm like, what can I do? And then in my bag, I happen to have a bit of blue silicone vacuum line. I wrapped it around it, taped it all the way up, and I could just shove it in there, screw the plate and stuff back down, and it would work like that. So then I just borrowed a timing light off someone, checked it was in the right spot with that, and just drove it. And it was, I think it did another day and a half of driving at Mount Gambier, and it did a figure eight night after that.
Yeah, right.
And then I pulled it out and we put another dizzy in it.
I hazard a guess that you were probably the only person with a dizzy at all.
Yeah.
At that point.
Even after SR20s, there had gone away from a factory type dizzy and had crank trigger, like nothing there had any kind of dizzy.
Yep.
So.
I feel like if you had gone around asking people if they had a spare dizzy at all, they'd be going, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is distributor?
Mm.
For sure. Coming from Bo Gagliardi, if you could crash into any FD Pro driver whilst drifting with them, who would it be and why?
There's probably a couple that create crashes themselves that you could probably crash into, and then no one would ever blame you for it.
One comes to mind.
But I don't know. I think It would be cool to not so much purposely crashing into, but just push 110%, and if you have a tangle up, that would be all right. But maybe someone like either Chelsea or Vaughan, if you're pushing real hard and just throwing down how those boys throw down, and if you come together, you come together, probably wouldn't be the end of the world. Yeah. I don't think I could purposely hit someone.
Yeah.
That's always my brother. Because I could turn him around on purpose.
Nice. Coming from Brodie Ma, what influenced you more while growing up, Fast and Furious or Need for Speed?
Probably Need for Speed. Underground 2, especially, if it was an Underground 1.
Yep.
So, but Fast and the Furious still had, I think they sort of influenced different things.
Yeah.
Like Underground 2 was the ability to just change literally whatever you want on a car. Like even some games now don't even let you change that much stuff, which is sort of pretty cool. But then Fast and the Furious was more of like an appreciation for other, like there's V8 stuff, there was Honda stuff, there was Nissan stuff, Toyota stuff, like appreciating all sorts of things. Because I think if I was to be influenced more by Fast and the Furious, I'd be a Honda boy with a black EG coupe that cruises around like an idiot, like they had in the first one.
I know someone with a red EG coupe that might be selling it soon.
Yeah. But yeah, probably Underground 2.
Yeah. Nice. Coming from Al from the Skid Factory, turbo or supercharger and why? Show your workings was his exact words.
Show workings. Turbo, but still got to have carburetors on it. Blowing through it, that'd be the go. May possibly be what powers the next drift car.
Oh, okay.
Some people might think that's playing with fire, but...
Yeah, probably.
We've mucked around with a few of them at work for customers, and me and Dad are like, we've got to do this for ourselves one day.
I've seen over the years, I don't know so much now, probably not, but back in the earlier days, like the earlier 2000s, I've seen a lot of blow-through and draw-through turbo setups on a drag strip.
Mm.
Different applications and different uses, obviously, but yeah.
Blow through, I think it sort of works how it normally would, as long as you get the carb is vented to manifold pressure and stuff.
Yeah.
Works really well. But with a draw through, the problem is always starting them because you have the carburetor 2 meters from the engine. If you've got it, especially if you've got an intercooler on it, where if it's blow through, it's like it was till it comes on boost.
Yeah.
And then it's party time.
Yeah. So which setup would you go with?
Turbo, but it'd be blowing through carbies.
Yeah, nice. coming from Woody, what's for dinner?
Been going to Eastern Creek later. Probably Macca's behind the M4, near the cards, probably. It seems to be a bit of a tradition for... It started when I first got my P's and me and my brother went out to... And a couple of his mates, we all jumped in my old Bluebird, cruised out and watched a high-tech figure eight comp, and then we're like, this is sick. We'll be back to watch all the other ones there. But we just Google mapped Macca's. It took us around to where Eastern Creek Karts is, and you can walk up a set of stairs there to the twin servos on the M4. And then every night since we've been to Eastern Creek, we go to that Macca's. It's nuts. Yeah. Like, Time Attack. Just even to the drag strip, or if we're at one of the Twilight Rally sprints at Eastern Creek, we always end up at the Macca's around the corner every single time.
Unreal. Coming from Kieran Ratcliffe, most nostalgic moment in drift and or rally for yourself? Or both?
Probably got one of each. As a navigator, I've won the AMSAG series. The guys navigating for, we won the championship that year in 2015. And as far as drifting goes, probably I won a DCA round up at Archerfield of the National Series once. That was a pretty cool night.
Yeah, nice.
And I was so, like, normally I just get to the start line and then just, like, melt. But this night I can remember being out in the middle, being the next battle. I think it was for the final. And I said to the start guy there, Russ, I said, who's in the final? I just was so out of it. And he's looking at me going, are you all there, mate? So you in here? Pointing to the car next to me. I'm like, oh, that's right. It's just so, because that night I'd versed Ben Mee and we went two reruns on top of our normal battle. And then the next guy I versed, we went rerun again. I think all night I probably could have driven a little bit better, but I was being forced to drive better because I wouldn't just do it from the start.
Yeah.
And then the top four battle was against Nathan Greenhill. That only run once. And then the final, we ran three times. By the end of it, I was like, don't care who wins anymore. I'm driving up today. Just ready to go to bed. Yeah.
So who was the battle? Who was the final battle against?
Nick Ullman, I think his name was.
Okay.
In a R31. It was like a 300 horsepower final battle between two cars. But you know, on a small track, they were very evenly matched.
Yeah, cool.
So...
nice. Coming from Josh Bennis, if you weren't born in Australia, where in the world would you have where in the world would you like to have been born, and why?
America or Kiwiland? America, because I would probably one of those people that likes Mustangs. Like, so as a drift car.
Yeah, you're not alone.
Or in Kiwiland, it's very similar to here in some ways. In other ways, it's probably a bit better. But they both have good drifting and railing, so it's like...
either or.
Yeah.
I like they both embrace drift a lot better than we do. I think in the States, it's more just quantity by numbers.
Yeah, that's...
they just have more people.
Right. They've got so many people over there.
Yeah.
It's one thing, like, I saw sort of always a bit outspoken on it, but some of the trends here in drifting, I'm like, that only works over there because there's so many people. Where over here it needs to be tamed down so it lasts longer. But people do what people do.
Yeah. Awesome. Your turn, mate. Give us a question for a future guest. You can take as long as you need. This is the most edited part of your podcast.
I was always thinking, man, do you word them up beforehand, or are they just quick thinkers? Or yeah, that would explain it. Was I the only one that built Lego cars as a kid and would throw them down the hallway to crash them into stuff? I've always wondered that. Because me and my brother used to do that all the time.
You weren't the only one. I can tell you that.
Oh, make it a two-parter. And how loud would your mum yell at you for doing it after hearing Lego just crash everywhere?
I'll put a third part to it. How loud did your dad yell when he stepped on the bits of Lego that you didn't pick up?
Very. Very in capitals.
Nice. Thanks for joining me, mate.
It's Thanks been for having
amazing.
Me.
Let's go and check out your car.
Will do.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you tune in again next week. Don't forget to head over and follow Gutter to Gutter on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok by searching for Gutter to Gutter Podcast. You can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/Gutter to Gutter Podcast, and be sure to check out the new website at guttertogutterpodcast.com. I'd really appreciate it if you could share the podcast with a friend and even consider leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. I look forward to bringing you more next week, so please have a great week and look after each other.